All right, so let's talk a little bit about obedience. In the Bible, it says, honor thy father and thy mother, right? That thy days may be long upon the land or something like that. So that's one of the Ten Commandments, historically, that most of society has lived by for all the generations of time. And I've thought about that, and I thought, okay, well, that's an admonition that we should do what our parents say, that we should honor them and respect them. But who teaches that? I mean, is it just something that you say, you should do this, and somebody automatically knows what that means, to honor another person? I suggest to you, no. That if you just say, honor me, or do what I say, somebody might for a bit, but they might decide they don't want to anymore. And somebody else down the road may not want to do that, so they might go, well, I'm going to go that direction. It's actually the parent's job to teach the child to honor them. We call that obedience. I want to read to you a little bit of the definition of obedience. This is from Webster's 1828 dictionary, which is my favorite dictionary. It says, compliance with a command, prohibition, or known law and rule of duty prescribed. So known law is super important with obedience. It says, the performance of what is required or enjoined by authority, or the abstaining from what is prohibited in compliance with the prohibition. To constitute obedience, the act or forbearance to act must be in submission to authority, which means there actually has to be somebody who is in charge. You can't have obedience without a person who has determined the law, okay? Then it goes on to say, the command must be known, it says, to the person, and his compliance must be in consequence of it, or it is not obedience. That's a big deal. If you don't actually know the law and what the consequences of the law are, then you're not disobedient when you do something that bugs somebody. So there is a difference. There's the parent who sees that somebody's doing something and this bugs me, and I'm going to tell him to stop doing this. That's one way of correcting a problem, but the child's not necessarily disobedient. The child just made a choice that the parent does not agree with or thinks could be wrong or bugs them. But the parent who teaches the child ahead of time, this is how you follow instructions, this is how you disagree appropriately and don't argue with another person or something like that, and this is the consequence if you don't do it correctly, is actually doing training, okay? And then when they do the training, then the child has the opportunity to be obedient or disobedient. But it's up to the parents to predetermine what the law is. And this totally goes back to, the way God formatted things for all of us, right? So he says, okay, this is what's right and wrong, and good and bad, and true and false, and you need to do these things, follow these things. Otherwise, there's going to probably be some consequences that you won't like. And so it follows that same exact format. But if we don't know the law and we mess up all kinds of things, if we don't know what's right and wrong, then we're probably given a little bit of latitude by God and hopefully some teaching somewhere along the line so we can figure that out. Teaching is paramount and preparatory to obedience. So if you want your children to be obedient, you have to think of yourself as a teacher all of the time. I want to start out today by asking you a question. What are the hard things that happen in your home, or maybe you see neighbors dealing with? What are some of those hard behaviors, hard moments as a parent that you're dealing with? Yes?
Whiny children,
yeah. So like you give them a no answer and they're like, ah, or they don't want to get up in the morning and they roll over, ah, or whatever it happens to be. That's the one Quinn might do. Oh. Okay, so whiny children, that means that they're either not following instructions, not accepting a no answer because they're not saying okay and dropping the subject, or they're not disagreeing appropriately with you. When a person whines, it's because they don't want to do something. But that's not an appropriate, respectful way for them to tell that to you, right? Absolutely. What other things are difficult? Yes? Passive-aggressive behavior. So that's a really manipulative behavior, isn't it? And that person, generally speaking, well, okay, so it depends on the, for instance, what's the age of the child?
Five.
Oh, five. Wow, you got a strong-willed one then, don't you? Okay. So is this husband next door going, yeah, we have strong-willed one. Okay. So age five, passive-aggressive. So that's a person who definitely needs to learn to disagree appropriately. They want a voice. They think they know stuff. They're really smart. Maybe even they are smarter than their years would dictate that they should be. And so what they need is they need a way, a format to communicate with mom and dad so that they don't have to be manipulative. Because really, passive-aggressive behaviors are just emotional manipulation. And parents do it to their children too, in fact, all the time. So you'll want to watch the way that you're communicating your feelings and frustrations to the family as well, and how well you're doing at governing yourself too. Because some of those little passive-aggressive things oftentimes are picked up. They're nuances that they pick up that seem powerful. It's a fake power. True power is calmness. And if she learns how to keep herself calm with a strong will, she will be unstoppable. I know, because I was that. I was that strong-willed, passive-aggressive, attitude problem from age five child. And my poor parents. I was the kind of child who even hit my own parents. I was really, really out of control. And then there was a time when I was actually with a neighbor, and this neighbor said to me, I was explaining my relationship with my parents and how bad it was. This is when I was 14 years old. And this neighbor, wise woman, said to me, Nicolene, have you ever thought of just saying okay? And I was like, what? That would never work. That's what they want me to say. And she's like, no, really. Go home, and if they ask you or tell you to do anything, just say okay and be okay. If they tell you not to do something, say okay and be okay and see what happens. She says, I bet you'll get to do all kinds of things that you want to do. And previous to this, we had planned a party, and I told her I wasn't going to be able to go because my parents never let me do anything. She said, we'll postpone the party for 2 weeks. You go home and try this for 2 weeks. So she baited me to see if I could get to this party. So I didn't think it would work, and I went home. And when I went home, and it was my dish night that night. That's like the worst job in the house, or at least it was at our house, because the sink was always flowing over. Anyway, and so I remember after dinner, my mom said to me, Nicolene, it's your dish night. And I said, okay. And I stood up, and I started doing the dishes. You would have thought I dropped a bomb in the kitchen. My parents were like, and they were looking at each other like, did you do this? Did you do that? What? It was really amazing. And then I remember, like, the next day, my mom saying, Nicolene, you really need to clean your room. And I had one of those rooms that was like the little teeny trail from the door to the bed kind of a thing, and clothes everywhere. And I said, okay. And I just started doing it right then. I remember my mom leaning in the doorway, just looking on with disbelief for probably 15 or 20 minutes, just not even sure what happened to her child. What happened was, I recognized that I had power. After I told my mom I would clean the room, and I saw her shock, I remember cleaning the room, picking up things, knowing she was looking at me thinking, I am so powerful. I have all the control. Like, I remember thinking that, and I was a bit of a control freak, which was why I would spar with my parents like I did, and why I was so strong-willed and so disrespectful. But after that, I found my true power. The power to get whatever I wanted. The power for my freedom, the power for my happiness. And it was all summed up in one little word. The word was, okay. And I had to be okay and say it. And that was it. And it changed everything. Seriously, by that weekend, I was like, can I have friends over for whatever? And they were like, sure. It was amazing. Do you know what? If you have a child who has a problem with wanting to follow instructions from you, you might want to just point blank explain to them, did you know that if you say okay and be okay, that when you want to do things, I will feel more like that you're going to be, you know, making the right choices in that circumstance, and I'll want to do those things for you too. I mean, you hate for the relationship to feel that way, but guess what? It does. It works that way. When you are always at odds with your child, you're not sure if you can trust them, and you don't give them as many opportunities. That's what we do. It's the way we think. And so they need to know that's the way we think. Give them the real power, not the fake stuff that comes with an attitude problem. So what I want to explain to you today is how to improve your relationships through teaching your children obedience. And I'm going to use this whiteboard, if you don't mind. Is that why it's here? Okay. So this is what teaching children looks like. All right, so this center section right here is all of your core values, your morals, your beliefs, everything that probably comes from your religious choices. And those are the reasons that you send out these things. This is a wagon wheel. These are the things you teach. Maybe you teach math. Maybe you teach manners. You teach them to cook. So you might teach them some life skills. You're going to teach them some social skills. I'll talk a little bit later today about how I teach children social skills. You know, whatever it happens to be. But these are all the different things that you teach your children. The reason you chose to teach your children those things was because you have some belief, some piece of your core that you feel like is important enough that it needs a skill attached to it. And that your children, in order to live that core more fully, need a particular skill. So if you tried to drive this wagon wheel without this little band, you'd have a problem though, wouldn't you? Even if you had all the core beliefs and all the skills, it would fall apart. Because you need this band or goes around the outside. This band is the relationship. That relationship holds all of the teaching into the core. That is the thing that makes it all come together. So if you're going to teach your children, because you're all homeschoolers now, we've just determined that. If you're going to teach your children anything, if you don't have a good relationship, or if there is a problem in your relationship band, what's going to happen to math if there's no relationship with you and math and the core beliefs? If you're missing the relationship between you, if there's a battle going on right there in the math section, then you're actually going to lose the attachment that math has to truth. It's just going to become this thing because it's not held tightly to your beliefs. Okay? So the relationship is what I want to talk about. When you teach your children obedience, what you're doing is teaching them how to have a good relationship with you. This is something that we deliberately teach our children. I want to share with you six keys for creating an environment where you can strengthen this relationship and teach them self-government. My definition of self-government is being able to determine the cause and effect of any given situation and possessing a knowledge of your own behaviors so that you can control them. So that's two parts. Self-government is seeing the world through the eyes of cause and effect. And I know that it seems like, okay, that's hot. If I touch it, I'll get burned. That's cause and effect. Some of those things are learned pretty instinctively. But I suggest to you that people don't necessarily all instinctively learn that if I have an attitude problem, I will feel disconnected from my spouse. If I yell at my children, they will feel distant from me. They don't get that. Why? Why do you think people don't get that cause and effect? Yes. So we've accepted that it's just that way. Very possible, yes.
I think it's because we're lacking the skills that aren't taught down from generation to generation, mm-hmm. and also because we have developed into a really selfish society where it's all about self. It's all about, you know, my computer time, my Facebook time, my
okay.
time.
So if it's all about self, that means it's all about your feelings, right? Feelings have been given a lot of traction nowadays. Have you noticed that? Feelings are like super important. Almost everyone in the world thinks they're a therapist. Okay, was there another one? Yeah?
I was just going to say it's similar that we haven't been taught and we assume that we should come, that we should naturally know how to love each other, but if we haven't been taught, our grandparents were taught.
Uh-huh. I thought that. I thought as soon as the child comes out, I'm just going to know. And the child came out and I went, ah, and I didn't know. In fact, when I started doing foster care for troubled teens, Quinn was 3. And he was the kind who would pick up his metal Tonka truck and have a tantrum and chuck it against the wall. And here I was going to take on some of the toughest teens that there were in Utah with the Utah Youth Village, which was who I worked for. And something happened that was amazing. They taught me some skills. And I went, oh, these are so common sense. Why don't people know these? How come there's not like training for parents? And as I started reading old books about parenting, clear back from, you know, like the 17, 1800s, I was like, oh my word, people knew this. What did we do? I think we got selfish. I think we got emotional. I think we got lazy, and I think we got busy. Okay? And when we're busy, we just want to be as efficient as possible. And isn't it more efficient to just say, get over here now, instead of going, okay, honey, I understand that you don't want to do that right now, but you're not following instructions, da-da-da-da-da, and to have a big teaching time about that, that seems like it's not as efficient, right? But there's a difference between efficient and effective. So, you may get them over there. They may actually feel inspired out of fear for a moment to do what it is that you say, but you have not effectively created a good bond with that teaching. Your teaching then created a big hole in that one particular area. So learning cause and effect. The reason why that we don't learn cause and effect is, number one, it's not historically being passed down. You can change that. I was with Emma Adams and her family yesterday, and I love seeing this little 2-year-old. I'm like, because we were talking about self-government stuff, he's never going to not know self-government. That's beautiful. That's like my children. My foster children, I had to teach them self-government. My children have never not known self-government. When people call my daughter, who's 16, to come babysit, she'll say to them, is it okay if I teach your children to follow instructions and accept no answers? What are your negative consequences? Do you? And they're like, and she'll come and like create a system while she's there of communication. And the people are like, holy cow, can you come over when I'm there? That would be really good. And I've actually told them they can't rent out my children. I've let that happen a few times, but that's it. Because it's kind of like they have a life too. But anyway, but how neat would that be for you to break that cycle so that the new historical is, I know how to control myself. That's the second part of the definition of self-government. The second part is that you possess a knowledge of your own behaviors so that you can control them. One of my heroes is Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin did one of the bravest things that any person could do. He sat down and he analyzed himself and he found 13 problems with himself. And he wrote those 13 problems on a list. And after he saw that list, he said, I got to conquer these. How am I going to do it? And he determined that he would make a plan. His plan was that he would work on one at a time. And as soon as one was completely done, he would work on the other one. It took him years to conquer these 13 vices that he saw within himself. After he conquered these 13 vices, He became the sage of wisdom. He became one of the fathers of freedom in our country. He became the man who said, we should have fire stations. Hey, Noah Webster, why don't you write down all the words? Let's make a dictionary. Hey, how about we have a library? Hey, how about we fix the streets? He started working on all of these projects and everyone listened because he had power. It is my belief his power came from that moment when he chose to govern himself, to assess himself and conquer his problems. So how do you help your children do this? Do you sit down and make a list of all the problems? It's probably not going to work the same when they're five. Okay? The teaching has to be steady all the time, but you still have to do that assessment part. You have to analyze with them over and over and over again. And there has to be an environment that has a proper tone and a proper structure for this teaching to take place and be effective. So in order to teach self-government, it takes two things. Because it's environmental, okay? The environment requires the right tone and the right structure in order to make it happen. I'm going to explain to you today the elements of tone and structure that I have noticed have worked. That doesn't mean that you couldn't add more to them or there aren't other things that you have figured out have worked as well. But I'm hoping that the things that I tell you today about tone and structure and some of these skills and way to strengthen relationship will add to what you're already doing so that when it gets down to helping them with their homework or helping them with their music lesson or whatever it happens to be, that there isn't a battle anymore. That's not what it's supposed to be like. I cannot believe for a second, even though, like you said, we are taught to just believe that's the way it is. I cannot believe for a second that God would set the whole world up in families so that we could all annoy each other. I just can't think that's the case. So that we could learn more selfishness, frustration, and disconnection. That just cannot be the answer. I think it's got to be the complete opposite, and I think our society has bought into a pack of lies in regards to the family. And we can do something about it.